Hello, and welcome to the Writers and Illustrators of the Future podcast. This is John Goodwin, your host. This podcast is dedicated to the aspiring writer and artist, and will provide inspiration and tips from top professionals in the field. If you've been listening to this podcast or are new to it, I thank you very much. I would also appreciate it if you took a moment to follow it on whatever platform you use to listen to your podcasts. Writers and Illustrators of the Future is one of the largest and longest running writing competitions in the world, now celebrating four decades of providing a helping hand as initially conceived by L. Ron Hubbard. I also want to let you know that the Writers of the Future volumes are available in bookstores throughout the U.S., Canada, the U.K., South Africa, and Australia, as well as to all major online retailers. Now, I'm here at Superstars Writing Conference in Colorado Springs. And it was a year ago that I interviewed Storm Humbert, where we discussed a Kickstarter he was doing for the Inner Workings anthology, A Calendar of Fools. Inner Workings is an anthology that was filled with 16 stories from award-winning authors, but that's not all it is. It's also, you had, 16 Writers of the Future winners in there?
Yep, 16 Writers of the Future winners for stories and their craft essays, and then we had two bonus essays from one from Kevin J. Anderson and one from James A. Owen.
Good. So now this year, he's back with two other members of this project, William Joseph Roberts, who's got a, actually officially known as Hillbilly, which is a lot easier to say than William Joseph Roberts over and over again. So Hillbilly and Rise to Feature 37 winner, John M. Campbell. So let's get started. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
So to begin with now, let's get an overview of, because Storm, you're Rise to Future winner from volume 36. And then John, you're winner from volume 37.
Correct, yeah.
And Hillbilly is an editor and publisher of
Three Ravens Publishing.
Three Ravens Publishing. And so we got lots of firepower here. So first of all, the concept that you had then, Storm, of A Calendar of Fools, which is your publishing house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that we wanted to... The whole purpose of Calendar Fools, one, we wanted a vehicle where we could work on projects together because we all met at the Writers of the Future workshop and gala. We wanted to continue doing things together. So making a small press was the most effective way to do that from like a financial standpoint, just to have all that in order. But we also want our projects to provide great fiction for readers, but also give back to the writing community. And that was with Inner Workings. We wanted to give back by helping, giving people a leg up, giving them tips, craft essays from writers about the things that they do well, hoping they help other people do those things well. With Intergalactic Rejects, the give back is different because what we want to do now—
Rejects, that's your current project.
This current project is called Intergalactic Rejects, and it's an anthology based on rejected stories because as writers, we deal with rejection all the time. It's actually most of the communication we get is no thank you. So, and in the short fiction market, there's this weird hole in the bottom because you can have a great story that goes and gets maybe to an editor's desk 10 or 11 times, right? But doesn't get, it gets passed on. But all these markets say don't submit the same story again. So once you run out of markets, you have no place to put this story. It still could be great, but there's nowhere to put it. No one can see it. But there's no market that just does that. So we wanted to not only showcase that rejected stories are great and that you getting a rejection doesn't mean your story's bad, but we wanted to provide that missing piece temporarily for the short fiction market of a place people can put their rejected stories that are still fantastic.
Which is a brilliant idea.
Thank you.
Definitely unique.
Thank you.
So, and obviously your Calendar of Fools, it's right up your alley.
Yes, yes. We have fun.
Yes. So now, first of all, how did your first book do?
Inner Workings, it went really well. We funded 276%, John, somewhere in there.
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that. And we hit a bunch of stretch goals. We gave out a bunch of free ebooks and other bonuses, including those two bonus essays from Kevin J. Anderson and James A. Owen. And now it's available on Amazon and through Ingram Sparks and a bunch of other Smashwords, right?
And Smashwords and Draft to Digital.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is the other part of Smashwords. So yeah, you can pick up a one of our books in both ebook format and in print format from just about anywhere now,
which is great. So now a bit about your, how you constructed then your publishing house. So you are the
managing member. That means I sign the checks and the contracts, and I have to deal with the taxes, which is all super interesting and fun. But our other owners have very specific things that they do. Like John, for example, handles our distribution. Eric does a lot of our layouts. He did layout for Inner Workings. Zach edited our first project, Zach B.
Yeah.
David's doing the illustrations.
Yeah, he does all our graphics. David Elsenson, who was in 36 with me, he does all of our graphics, like that that beautiful bookmark I got you. We bought the artwork somewhere else, but he punches it up and puts all the text on there and makes it look pretty for us. And then Trent Walters is also an owner.
Right. Good. And then now we've got Hillbilly here. Mm-hmm. So what's your role in this whole thing here, Mr. Hillbilly?
Well, now, see, at Dragon Con this past year, I ended up getting wrangled by Storm, who popped up, wanted to talk to me, caught me over at the Westin, you know, at the author bar, and basically headhunted me to jump on board with this with something I had rejected. And, you know, I'm still not as illustrious as these two gentlemen because I haven't gotten anywhere with Writers of the Future. I keep getting silver honorable mentions.
You've gotten somewhere, you just not gotten to your point B.
I haven't gotten to the point where I get to come to the gala yet. And this piece that I actually submitted has won several silver honorable mentions. I just never could get it past that little point. It's probably the opening is what I'm figuring on that one. But it's like, you know, it's perfect. I've submitted it I don't know how many times.
Well, we told you, don't start a story wearing nothing but a smile. She walked in. That's not our market.
But, you know, it for my place, even though, you know, I'm a writer and I'm a publisher with Three Ravens, to get invited to somebody else's gig is pretty profound. I mean, that's just like, it's humbling, you know? And then to find out that I'm actually one of the anchors, that's a whole other level of holy crap, you know? Mm-hmm. This is doing something. I'm getting somewhere. So, you know, even though I'm only getting several honorable mentions, it's still something decent.
Well, like Orson Scott Card says, when he had Intergalactic Medicine, he says, all I'm able to buy is the Writers of the Future rejects.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I've talked to Jody Lynn Nye multiple times without giving away any kind of names on my stories and everything, just trying to figure out what it is she's looking for. Because, you know, it's a right-to-market thing. It really, really comes down to, if you're getting silver or even an honorable mention, it's a publishable story. It's just not meant for that anthology.
Right.
And, you know, you've got to figure out that right to market. That's no different than figuring out what a different publisher wants when you're submitting to an open call for an anthology or a magazine. You know, you got to figure out what they like, what they want to publish, and what that editor in particular enjoys reading.
Right. That's exactly right. So how'd you put, like, what'd you do to put this together?
I've had the idea for a while to do this anthology. Like, the idea of doing an anthology based on rejected stories is something I've wanted to do for a long time. I actually talked with Jason Sanford and Maurice Brodus like 2 years ago about it at my local con, Confusion, just over breakfast. I've wanted to do it for a while.
Yeah.
And it fits with what we're trying to do at Calendar of Fools, which is, you know, give back, help people. Because it's not just that we want to provide a market for these rejected stories, but we also want to give people something they can own and hold in their hand when they get those rejections, when they get flooded with the thanks for the opportunity, but in their inbox. And they can go look through it and say, like, all these stories were rejected, you know, 5 or 10 or 15, or in one of the cases of our anchor authors, 47 times. And it's still great. I still love these stories. My story could be just as good as these. And my rejection doesn't mean that it's not.
Right.
And so that's really what drove me to, that's the idea behind this. And putting it together was really just like finding myself at Dragon Con, and we had already agreed that it was going to be the next thing that we did. So I already had the green light to start recruiting people. And I started after the Writers of the Future panel, Robert J. Sawyer, he was the first one that gave me a story.
Wow.
And then, you know, once he signed on, it was easier to say, hey, Robert J. Sawyer's giving me a story. Do you have one? And so it was easier to build. And, you know, we have one from my friend and mentor, Samuel R. Delaney, also, who I got because he's my friend and mentor. But the rest of it was all filled out at Dragon Con. with the exception, no, it was all filled out Dragon Con. Like, wow. I knew who the eight were that I was going to ask, and I had seven yeses. I knew who the eighth was. So, yeah, Dragon Con was where it was officially born.
That's great. Now, is there a theme to this thing, or is it just rejected story, science fiction, fantasy?
Yep, just science fiction and fantasy rejected stories. Once we do the open call, after we fund, it is required that you have at least three rejections. The idea being that you should have sent to the big pro markets first. Like, you should, as a writer, you should be working your way top to bottom. So you should, if we get to pro rate, if we get to 8 cents, you should have still sent it to Clark's World first, because they pay 12, and then there's two other markets that pay 10. So there's, like, if you're working top down, it doesn't have to be those exact ones, but we want at least three rejections on these stories that people send in.
Mm-hmm.
Because we want them to have, you know, made the rounds. And like I said, we have anchor authors whose stories were rejected upwards of 40 times. We have multiples that were over 25 times.
How many stories are in there?
We have 8 anchor authors that are already in, and then we'll slush for 8 more, so we'll have 16.
16 stories.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, and an essay from Robert Silverberg. So it's
good.
16 stories and a Robert Silverberg essay.
Did he write it? Is it a new essay, or is it one that he already published that?
It is kind of both. So he published it in Asimov's maybe a decade or two ago.
Something like that, yeah.
And but he's adding to it for us. So it's based on an old essay, but he's expanding it for our anthology.
Oh, good. Good for him. Yeah, he's a judge emeritus right now.
Mm.
Yeah, he's kind of like...
Bob's good people. I've gotten to publish him, and the amount of information I've learned from him just chatting back and forth is insane.
Yeah, the Nebulas a few years, or pre-pandemic, the Nebulas that were by the LA airport, I interviewed him, and it was interesting a lot. He was at the very tail end of the Golden Age,
mm-hmm.
or what became the Golden Age of science fiction, and has had great stories to tell, and his own curve as he moved up the ranks as a writer. So now you've got Calendar of Fools happening. And we'll get back to that, to your story in a bit. And it's a Kickstarter. We'll be giving the link to be able to, for people to participate. And we'll post it also on the actual upload that we when I do it. But since you won Writers of the Future, what's been happening in your career as an author?
I mean, it's taken off. I've been focusing on writing novels, but I've still published seven or eight more short stories since winning Writers of the Future, and I haven't been focusing on it. I've been focusing on novels, but I publish a lot in anthologies because when you're focusing on novels, I found it's nice if you have a really targeted request for your story. So you're like, all right, I'm going to take a break for a week, and I'm going to crank out this short story, send it to this anthology, and then it's back to the novel. But just the professionalization, the connections, and the support, it's been really helpful, and I feel like I'm definitely on a solid upward trajectory ever since winning.
That's good. And how about yourself, John?
Yeah, same with me. I've probably gone in the 8 to 10 short stories that have been published since then. Yeah, and in my case, in terms of rejections, the story I submitted to Writers of the Future was rejected several times. I wrote it for an anthology that my writing group, Rocky Mountain Fiction Writers, had put together, and they weren't really interested in a science fiction story for that anthology. But I have a science fiction book club, and two of the guys in that book club were previous winners of Writers of the Future, and so they encouraged me to submit it, and so I did. And this was during the COVID year, and once it won, which was a big surprise to me. We got to talk to David Farland about, how did he pick the stories that year? Did he make them consciously more optimistic than normal because of the COVID year? And he said, that was definitely true. And it just so happened my story was in that vein. And, it's kind of like Storm was mentioning, you got to find the right editor at the right time who's really looking for what you're writing. And that was exactly what happened with David Farland and my story. So, that's one of those issues of if you have a good story, keep keep at it. Keep submitting it to the right places, and a good story will eventually find its home. So that's what we're trying to do with Intergalactic Rejects, too.
Okay, good. Now, Hillbilly, because you started your own publishing house, I mean, your career, because we've talked before, so you went Navy, and then were you writing during Navy?
No. Okay, so, you know, I ended up going into the Air Force right out of...
Air Force, sorry.
Just a little bit after high school, and I used to write all through, like, grade school, junior high school, but I never had any real guidance. My English literature teachers, they couldn't point me in a direction and give me an idea of how to go about the business or the craft. So, you know, I fumbled around writing this and that, 1,000 words here or there. Same thing through my Air Force days. I jotted an idea down and, you know, start to world build a little bit. And in about 2000, 2001, I was having real issues with my back. I ended up getting booted out on a medical in 04. And I started jotting down a lot of ideas and really seriously world building. And I built my fantasy world. And I ended up knocking out about 60,000 words on that novel. Never password protect, read, and write on your files because nobody's going to steal them. And you will lose them for 20 years. I learned that the hard way. But in the meantime, from that, I got booted out, used my GI Bill, went to college, went into engineering, started, you know, had a family, babies, and then I was working as a design engineer at a boiler boiler repair and piping repairs place. And the inspector just happened to be attached to LibertyCon. And he's like, you've never heard of this? I'm like, no. So I went. And in 2017, my switch got flipped. I sold my first story at that conference. And it's been gangbusters since because I got the information that I needed on craft and business. I had an idea and a direction to run now where I couldn't ever find it before. You know, I fumbled through the Chattanooga Writers Guild for years who were more literary, and they snubbed their nose at pulp and genre fiction. Mm-hmm. So there was no help there to guide me.
Right.
But after... a little bit more time in 2019, opened the doors of Three Ravens. And the initial was me and my partners, we were opening it for publishing our labors of love that we didn't want to give away. But then we started to open the doors to other people to help them realize their dreams. And, you know, we pushed the stuff out there and helped them to get it out to the readers.
Good. So then... So you have two career paths going right now, at least as regards to writing and publishing.
Yes.
You got your own publishing line, which you then do the whole, are you the one that solicits and you're the chief cook and bottle washer?
I'm absolutely the chief cook and bottle washer. The word witch, my better half, she takes care of the back office stuff with the books and helping me with editing and stuff like that. Unfortunately, my partners have had a lot of life going on in the last year or so. So they've... been busy with things that they had to do. Yeah. When medical stuff pops up, you just can't ignore that.
Or if you do, it's to your peril.
Right. But, you know, even with the extra workload, we've just been pressing on and trying to get things out there. You know, we run a number of anthologies. So I feel your pain on anthologies. I understand, you know, especially when you do a slush pile and, you know, we had one, the Heathens and Heroes anthology. I had 96 submissions come into that. And,
oh. Did you read them all or do you have a team?
No, I went through every one of them. That one was my baby. Now, I've got other editors that have this project or that project, and they go through the slush that comes in. And then we do our invitations, and we bring people on board. I've already invited a couple of people to be anchors or give me an opening essay for whatever, like the urban fantasy, or we've got a... another Car Wars thing coming up. We got a bunch of different things. And so, you know, the wrangling, doing all that wrangling is a very big chore. So I commend you on jumping into it.
So on this particular upcoming anthology that you're putting together, the stories are all over the field. They're just, the only thing that they've got in common is science fiction fantasy rejects.
Yep.
So it's not dissimilar to what Writers of the Future is in terms of just being all over the spectrum, mm-hmm. except they're the best of the best.
Same with Inner Workings. We were all over the spectrum with that, too. It was just they had to be science fiction and fantasy, and they came with a craft essay. So same deal. We're usually we try to be pretty wide open with our calls so we can open ourselves up to as many good stories as possible.
Right. And so this one here, obviously, or not obviously, but this one, this is anybody. It doesn't have to be submitted to Writers of the Future or one Writers of the Future. Just any science fiction fantasy author.
Yep. Once we fund, once we do our open call and put that out, anybody who has a story that has at least three rejections can send into our slush pile. And I'm kind of excited. I haven't slushed since I stopped reading from Clark's World. So I'm kind of excited to slush, but I feel like that'll wear off in about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
This really was a reject. Okay, good.
Well, that's one of the reasons why we're talking to you, John, because we think that you've got an audience out there who's interested. I'm sure they've got rejected stories.
For sure.
And this might be a place that they'd be interested in submitting.
Yeah, a key part of Writers of the Future, at least what we do with this podcast, the online workshop, the blog, the forum, is there's no judging. It's just straight. It's just encouragement. Mm-hmm. We want you to know that, you know, you've got somebody here that's totally willing for you to succeed. And if you haven't succeeded yet, keep plugging away. I'll give you lots of great stories about people that you have no idea what a rough, rocky start they had, who are now the A-listers in the genre.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, sometimes it's amazed to learn what people went through to get finally up and running, you know? And so it would make the Wright brothers at Kitty Hawk look like, you know, a smooth sailing, you know?
Yeah. Well, now I got a question. All right. So I know with our anthologies, following submission guidelines is very important. Mm-hmm. So what kind of submission guidelines are you going to set forth on this?
The normal ones, like 12-point font, double space, either Arial or Times New Roman, Courier, if that's really your thing, just some normal font, shun manuscript format. Just, I feel like normal formatting stuff is...
You have a word limit?
We're starting at 5,000. But we do have stretch goals. Our first three stretch goals are to increase the pay for the slush red piles. We're starting at 5 cents. First stretch goal goes to 6 cents. Second stretch goal goes to 7 cents. Fourth stretch goal gets at 8 cents, so pro rate.
But word length?
It starts at 5,000 words, cut off. And then after we get to 8 cents, our next stretch goals will be to increase the length of the stories we accept. So we'll go from 5,000 to 6,000 to 7,500, and then that's where we'll cut it because that's the cutoff for an actual short story.
Right.
Now, what about file type? Because that, to me, is one of the most important ones.
Word or RTF.
Okay.
Yeah, those are, because anyone can open those. So it's just the most reliable way to take it.
I usually ask them for an RTF file because there's less chance of a bug on it.
Yeah.
All right. That's true. So now, what's the timeline you've got going on this? Because we're going to publish this just prior to opening up your Kickstarter.
So we're promoing for, we're 5 weeks left to promo. We wanted to plan 6 weeks. So we're going to launch on March 19th. We'll launch, and it's a 30-day Kickstarter. We've got a lot of awesome stretch goals lined up. Our first one, we're going to put them all on so people know what they are. It's not a surprise. The first one we have, if we get our, so once we reach our starting funding goal, our first stretch goal will add to the anthology a foreword by Neil Clark, who's the editor and publisher of Clark's World. And then we have a lot of great ebook giveaways for future stretch goals. We've been given a lot of stuff. Kevin J. Anderson said he'll give us his first Dan Shamble book. So we'll have that to give as an ebook for a stretch goal. We haven't decided what goes where, except for the fact that Neil's foreword is our first stretch goal, because I really want that in there. So.
Yeah. Good. Good. Now I've talked about this before in a few other podcasts, but the whole subject of Kickstarters, mm-hmm. and obviously it was all over the news when Brandon hit his $42 million yeah. mark and set the world record on any Kickstarter done, still has a record. So why have you opted to use Kickstarters as your method of birthing a book?
It's really very efficient, and John will be able to talk a lot to our fulfillment and how that is done and how that makes things, I mean, hard on him, but easier on the rest of us. But really, it's just a pre-sale approach. Like you're just pre-selling your book, so it helps you cover costs because you're not going to pay for anything unless you can pay for it, because Kickstarter either gives you all the money or none of the money. So it's a way to put out work, I think, I feel like, relatively safely with minimal upfront investment. I mean, this time we had some left over from the last Kickstarter, so we were able to do things like purchase the artwork ahead of time without, you know, passing the hat around. We just had funds left over from the last one, so, and we were able to get more expensive artwork this time, which is why I think it's really cool artwork, and David did a great job making it into, you know, bookmarks and banners and photos, and the cover looks fantastic. And but yeah, I mean, Kickstarter just it's a lot of work to do one, but it also, I think, saves you a lot of headache from, you know, if you are going to just put your stories together and pay for them all up front and then go to a publisher and then rely on being able to sell those books and make that back afterward. If you're using Kickstarter, yeah, there's a chance that your project won't happen. You know, if you do it right and you have a good project people like, it's going to happen. But you're not going to go in a hole on it if you do it right and do your math right.
Good. So, John, speak to me.
Yeah, a lot of this Kickstarter stuff, we actually learned from this Superstars conference, you know.
From Dean?
I think Dean and you know, several other people have talked about those. And in fact, that's how we got to know Frog and his wife. They do Kickstarters.
And Dean actually looked over our Kickstarter last year before we launched it. He looked at it for us.
Yeah, Dean equals Dean Wesley Smith, one of our judges, and he's amassed, he does, what, 6 or 7 Kickstarters a year. Well, he's very prolific.
Last year in the Kickstarter class that Dean was helping with, he mentioned that, you know, with Kickstarters, it's like getting that advance that they used to get from the big publishers. That's a way for authors to get that advance ahead of time and be able to press on with your advertising and everything else like that. So, you know, it's valid.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, good.
Yeah. So this first book that we did was a learning curve for all of us. You know, it was Storm who actually figured out how to put the Kickstarter together. And then he was the guy who kind of, you know, shepherded it all through the process to get to that point where we actually had the money to pay our authors. And then it was kind of like, okay, I learned a little bit last year about Draft to Digital and how they could support Kickstarters by allowing us to use their services to do the fulfillment of the Kickstarter to all of our backers. So that was the way we got all of our ebooks out initially. And then we, at the same time, we were also doing a paperback version through KDP, which would then come out on Amazon. And so we could use the advanced copies that we would get through KDP as, again, fulfillment paperbacks that we could give to our backers who wanted paperback versions. And that was kind of my big role last year and educational thing, was to figure out how to do all that. And then we went one step further and figured out how we could also get it out onto Ingram Spark, which would then get us more international, you know, Canada, UK, and Europe exposure to our book as well. So all of those things, now that we've got one book under our belt, I think we're going to be a lot more efficient this year with our next book that comes out, and it shouldn't be quite as hard as it was before.
That's good. So now on. So this is going to be your publishing platform, basically, that you're going to be, this will be your formula. You're going to do conceive, calculate.
Kickstart, right. Yeah. And we always have to have somebody who'll step up and do the editing. And it was Zach last year, and now it'll be Storm this year. I'm sure we'll help him with the slush pile stuff, but he'll be the final word, so.
Yeah.
And I think that'll be probably the formula for the future. You know, when somebody else has an idea that they'd like to get through with Calendar of Fools, we'll do something similar.
Okay, so now on getting this book together, so now obviously we're interested in talking about this as a viable means to get yourself published as an author, as well as why they should, you know, participate in this Kickstarter as well. So a little bit more now on why you chose Kickstarter over any other things that are available to be done, you know, instead of going just through the Amazon KDP or Ingram Sparks, you decided to go this way instead, because those other ways too, mm-hmm. you can do that. You don't need to kickstart.
It's the requirement for to do the other ones. It's the requirement of upfront investment. So we don't want to go negative and then be required to make our money back. We would rather pay for the project, and then any sales we have after the fact are just sales, gravy on top. So that just, it helps us stay in the black, and it helps us balance our books and make sure that we have the money to do the things we're trying to do.
Yeah, and I just interviewed Dion, who's the head of Ingram Spark, and he said that the author has no upfront money, and unless there's orders, they won't print any books. So it's only once the books are printed, once there's an order comes in, will they print books, and then you're going to pay for a paperback, like 500-page book would be like $5 to $6. If it's a hardcover, it's like $11 or so. And that's your cost, because it's POD. Are there, so with it being what you're doing, are you still paying the $5 to $6, or are you able to get a better rate because you're printing?
We can save on, well, John knows more than me, but basically you save on shipping once you, yeah.
Yeah, it's exactly what you were saying. That's how we took advantage of Ingram Spark as well. It was no cost to set up the book and get it sent out to the catalogs of all of their clients, their bookstores. So that was good for us because we didn't have to do that. I think mainly what the Kickstarter is doing for us is it allows us to pay up front the authors that are contributing to the book, and so we're using most of the funds to do that.
So that's the difference, because you're actually buying stories that you're then publishing, as compared to an author who's writing a book and I want to get out there. He's correct. The only person he has to pay is himself.
That's correct.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's another big difference.
Now I'm tracking. That's a huge difference.
Yes. Because with anthologies, so the advantage for us to start with anthologies is because you have more participants in the work. You mm-hmm. have more social media voices to amplify your project. So right. we could all you know, 12 of us who are in the inner workings could shout about it, and all of our guest authors and all that stuff. And now with this, you know, we'll have 16 people. So that's the bonus. You have further reach if you include more people, but you mm-hmm. do have more, you have more people to pay.
Right.
And so I think John's right. That's why Kickstarter is super valuable, because we need to buy the stories. And so in the contracts they sign, if the Kickstarter doesn't fund, we're not out any money, because we don't buy their story if we're not publishing the book. So
right.
we're never in danger there.
Got it. Now with your Three Ravens Publishing, do you do Ingram Spark? How do you print your books once you've said, okay, this is going to roll?
We primarily go through Ingram Spark for our print. We also go through Amazon eBooks. We end up going through KDP to start with. And once the KDP train kind of slows down to almost nothing, then I end up going wide and draft to digital. Also, I've been doing contracts directly with narrators, doing a royalty share with them, and we're going wide into Findaway Voices, because that's like 45 different platforms on audio versus just going Audible through ACX, where traditionally I've been going through ACX. And we've just been really blessed with the number of narrators that wanted to work with us and gave us really good quality stuff. But other than that, I've been really looking into...
Ingram Spark does ebooks too.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And after I get done with KDP, that's another place that I'll put them too. I try to spread it as far as I can. Drive-Through RPG is another place that I've been starting to list things at. You know, I'm working with trying to get into the AFE system, the military exchange.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so Army, Navy, Air Force exchanges, to get our books in the stores there on shelves. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. So now this book. So why is somebody who's going to that enjoy science fiction and fantasy, what's going to make this like different than other anthologies? What makes it like, oh yeah, I'm going to check this one out.
Well, for one, our anchor authors, we have a fantastic lineup. We have Robert J. Sawyer. We have Samuel R. Delaney. We have the Kevin J. Anderson and his wife, Rebecca Molesta, that are co-authors of his story. You know, we've got Hillbilly. We have Silverberg. There's so many authors that are already committed that you want to read. Mm-hmm. And also, you are getting to see the stories that wouldn't have otherwise existed, that would have fallen through the cracks, that you never would have gotten to see otherwise because they're running out of places that could have possibly published them. So these are kind of like the lost stories that we're recovering.
And other than the names you just mentioned, are these otherwise unpublished authors, or these are published authors that just, this is a story that just, for the life of me, I couldn't figure out why, but it's a great story and here it is.
You mean our other anchor authors?
Yeah.
Oh, no, they're, I mean, David Boop's in there, Jean Marie Ward, Donald Ekpeki. He, you know, had blew up this past year with Destiny Delayed and O2 Arena and all that stuff. They're all very successful, widely published authors that, you know, and these are stories from them that, so three of them are reprints, but they were rejected a bunch before they were originally published. But five of these stories from our anchor authors are original. They would have never been seen otherwise because they just ran out of places to try to put them. So again, you're seeing stories that you wouldn't otherwise have seen that are fantastic stories. Mm-hmm. And then when we do the slush pile, you're going to get stories that maybe from undiscovered authors that might have been lost if not for this market becoming available.
Good. And now when you open up the call then for the remaining eight stories,
yep,
that's just whoever submits can submit, whether they're brand new authors or they just had to have been submitted at least three times and rejected.
Yep. As long as they've got at least three rejections, anyone is open to submit once we do our open call. And, you know, we'll be yelling about it as soon as it's open. We'll be posting in the Superstars forum.
Yeah, I'll put it over on our Discord and on all our channels.
Yeah, we'll blow it up everywhere. So as many, there's a bunch of different Facebook pages that post open calls, so I'll post it on there. So, you know, we'll try to get the word out, but people should, one, follow the Kickstarter so that they can make sure that this project funds and that this market becomes available. And also because then you're going to know when the open call happens because you're following Kickstarter and our socials. So you know, Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, Twitter. Yeah, we're on all those. So as long as you follow us one of those places and the Kickstarter, you're going to be well informed.
Okay, great. And then, is there any particular things that you guys wanted to bring up? Because I wanted to go more into
I actually have one. So are you guys going to do a backer kit? Because I know when we did the Car Warriors project on Kickstarter, I didn't even realize that it was a thing. And, you know, the backers were like, is there going to be a backer kit? I'm like, what's that? So I had to go do some research real quick. It's like, no, because I didn't set it up ahead of time and I had no idea, but I'm going to look at it next time. So is that in y'all's plan?
We haven't planned to do a backer kit.
What is that?
It's where you can do extra fulfillment. Like, oh, crap, I didn't get in there to get that one thing that I wanted, you know, that extra add-on. So it's an opportunity for them to go ahead and get that extra add-on after the fact. So you get some extra sales. And I managed to set it up on our Square store and just set up an extra thing where people can go in there, grab a couple extra things that they wanted, and I added it into the Kickstarter itself. Because I didn't know about the backer kits, and there's backer kit, and there's two or three other programs that you can sign up on. You know, they end up taking a cut, but or you have to pay them so much, and they handle all that kind of stuff for you.
Mm. No, we probably won't do a backer kit just because it'd be another thing to learn to do.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah.
But lots of the things that we're offering aren't physical things that they get. Lots of them are either ebooks or critiques. Like our biggest reward tier is they buy a critique from me that they get before we do the open call. So they can send in their story, get a critique from me, and then send it in for the open call. and it's $150, but they also get ebook and paperback copy of Intergalactic Rejects and ebook and paperback copy of Inner Workings. Okay. So they get four books and a critique from me for $150. And we have 10 of those available. And then they can also get critiques from any of the other Calendar of Fools authors, randomly selected, for $80. Okay. And that's also will happen before the open call. So a lot of the stuff we have to offer is digital. And
right.
We're offering Tuckerizations, which are cool. So for those of you who don't know what a Tuckerization is, it is where you pay to have a character in a story named after you. And we're selling Tuckerizations for some of the stories that are in here. I have to check with which authors are willing to sell us Tuckerizations, but I already have one. Jean Marie mm-hmm. Ward has given us one Tuckerization to sell. I haven't talked to Hillbilly about it. I was planning to talk to everybody about it who was here. I need to talk to Kevin and Rebecca about it.
It's possibly easy enough to tweak it. I mean, are you talking red shirts? Are you talking – because there's levels of Tuckerization too. Red right. shirts where, you know, they get to go out in a blaze of glory, you know. They're red shirted just like Star Trek.
Yeah.
And then – or, you know, they're a secondary kind of support character in the background. They get named, but they're just kind of there. Major support or major characters that are, like, still we're, secondary, like, you know, Batman versus Robin.
Yeah. The Tuckerization we have right now for Jean Marie Ward is a very minor end-of-the-story character. So it's just a very basic Tuckerization. We would probably charge more for, like, main character Tuckerizations for authors that are willing to do that in their story. And there are multiple stories.
Batman and Hillbilly.
Right.
I mean, for my story, I know that I could easily tweak something.
Right.
And, you know, it's like, okay, well, that character gets to become this person.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a bunch of stories. Jean Marie Ward's story was limited just because it takes place in, like, ancient Ireland. So the naming has a specific historical context. You can't have someone named like
Bob,
you know, or, you know, you can't have a LeBron. Like, you can't, it's just not there.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So now I got it on your book here. And so this makes sense why it's something that anybody that likes speculative fiction, like short fiction, is going to enjoy this. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you're making a point, and the trick is to be able to making the point worth the money that somebody's going to help, you know, validate your right. point that you're making.
Right.
You know, so it's a noble thing, but it's got to be a viable noble thing.
Right.
So by putting all this work into it to make sure that they are good stories, they are properly edited, they're properly packaged, mm-hmm. you've got big names there of people that, even if you have people that aren't well known, they're all packaged in there so that they know they're getting a good deal of bang for their buck. Mm-hmm. And also, I can't discount the value of the pay it forward.
Right.
It really is important. Like Oliver Judge's for Writers of the Future, you know, since it was first conceived and started by Owen Hubbard in 1983, the whole thing of paying it forward and I've got some interviews coming up of stories with the first judges like Frank Herbert and Jerry Purnell. And some of these judges who are no longer with us, what it meant to them to be able to judge Writers of the Future. Yeah. You know, because for them, being able to help guarantee the next generation of writers and that the genre is in good hands is really important to Writers of the Future. Is very important to Mr. Hubbard, and that's why, I mean, he's well over $1 million in awards alone, let alone the cost of running the contest for now for 40 years. Mm-hmm. So that's a very legitimate set of bona fides you've got, you know, to be able to say, look at this is part of putting the future of science fiction and fantasy there.
Right.
So that said, I'm still more interested now in also in this Kickstarter thing, because there's more and more stuff happening with Kickstarters. There's more of the panels here at Superstars talking about Kickstarters. There's more storytelling of or experience of other authors attempting, or should I, or and Kickstarter becoming a viable means for writers to get their stories published. Mm-hmm. So if you can, and you guys can bandy around, all three of you, the basic procedure process of getting a story published on Kickstarter, including making, what do you have to do? Make sure you got good cover, good artwork that's been properly edited, because I don't want to scrimp on the shrimp on that one there.
Yeah.
You know, those are some things that are just really important. If you're a reader, I got it, just 4 million books a year, but only a percentage of that is actually worth reading because somebody's taking the time to really properly edit it. And so he hasn't there. So well, over to you.
Well, besides the obvious, I mean, you got to have a good quality product. You got to have something that looks good on the outside as well as the inside, you know, to sell the product. But before you go and do all that, you need to do your research. There's a lot of little pitfalls and stuff about doing Kickstarter that a lot of people don't realize. I mean, I've known many that failed horribly after the fact, even though they funded and they were successful, they didn't save their tax money back. So, you know, it became a horrible failure after the fact. Little things like that that you need to pay attention to if you're planning on going down this route. You need to really, you know, jump on YouTube, go to conventions or Arena. Is that her name? Arena Lockhart from Kickstarter that takes care of the publisher side. She's actually here and, you know, we can actually pick her brain. So finding out whenever she's going to make an appearance at a convention is a great thing. So you can learn from somebody in Kickstarter, you know, or like talking with Kevin J. Anderson, Dean Wesley Smith, James Artemis Owen, who have done multiple Kickstarters. They all looked at mine before I kicked it over. Yep. Same thing with Nick Thacker. He gave it a good look over. And it's like, yeah, this looks good, dude. Go with it. Yeah. Or do this little tweak, add some more artwork. It's like, okay, cool. That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, pick people's brains and don't just go blindly into it because it can bite you.
Yeah. The main thing, I mean, you really want to look professional. You need to do the work ahead of time. You need to have your graphics. You need to have your video. Projects with a video do so much better than projects without videos. So you need to have your video, which I still need to make for us. You need to have all your graphics in order. Ideally, you have even little thumbnail graphics for all of your rewards and add-ons, just so people see what they're purchasing. It looks, and all of this is professional quality stuff. Your story really needs to not only explain what you're doing, but it needs to give people a reason to feel good about what you're doing. They're investing in your message, in your goal, in your passion for the project. So when you're telling them your story, you really need to give them the full context of why you're doing what you're doing, why you think it's important, and why you think they should think it's important.
Yeah.
So really present what you're doing with all of the passion and belief you have in it, because there are people on Kickstarter who just like to back Kickstarters that they feel good about. They might not even want the book or the action figure or the game or whatever it is that's being sold. They just like to go and be a part of this Kickstarter community just to support good projects.
Well, right there, you just said it, community.
Yeah.
Really, that's one of the reasons I jumped onto Kickstarter with the Car Warriors project, was because I wanted to get into a whole other community and social media platform that I wasn't in before.
Mm-hmm.
And it spread the word of what we were doing.
Yeah, and you're talking about budgeting and stuff. And what we did a lot of work to try to figure out how much money did we need to try to get as a goal that would cover what we intended to pay our authors and so on. And then once we were done with our Kickstarter, we learned that the cost of printing had gone up over the
pandemic. Yeah. Just with the paper and then also the chemicals to be able to make.
Yeah. Paper. So we actually came out a little short from where we were hoping to be in terms of what we could pay our authors because of that. So, I mean, you've got to, you know, put in those extra little
contingencies,
contingency plans on what can happen beyond your control. So if you're talking about an author who is trying to, you know, fund his own work using a Kickstarter, I mean, those are the types of things that author needs to look at before he comes up with, you know, the budget he thinks he needs to get his project off the ground, and what it will take then to get it out to the backers on a good timeline. And that was another thing that happened with us the first time through, was that you know, we were a volunteer organization. You know, one guy was doing our layout for the book, and another guy was doing the artwork, and so on. And, you know, they'll have a situation where they couldn't work on it for a couple of weeks. And so our initial fulfillment timeline was kind of stretching out and out and out. This time we're going to have a little bit more control over those types of things so that we can, you know, set up a schedule and have a really good chance of meeting it and being able to, you know, show our backers that that they'll get it in a timely fashion.
Yeah, and really looking at your stretch goals and making sure that they're doable. I mean, one of ours was an extra novel, and that extra novel ended up going into review by Steve Jackson Games, and then we went back into edits, and it's been back and forth, so it's delayed from where I really wanted to be able to release it. Same thing with the anthology that we did based on, hey, we hit the stretch goal, we're going to do this anthology. Now we're back and forth on edits, finishing this up, getting contracts back from all the authors, and okay, cool. Now we just got to finish putting it together, and we can send it back for final proof, and then we can release.
You don't do the contracts ahead of time?
Not until we're for sure we got a story.
No, I mean, you don't do contracts before you do the Kickstarter?
No.
Oh.
That was one of those, it was, if we hit this mark, we're going to do an anthology. And Jody Lynn Nye,
I see.
After we hit another level, she was going to edit it for us.
I see.
You know, and it just, it became delays. So, you know, look at realistic goals. And this was just total learning curve. So sure. I'm learning as I'm going on that. You know, I added 3D models for the Car Wars board game that I created. And it's like, okay, this is not the easiest thing to do after all, to make sure it can 3D print correctly to scale. And I had one of our authors, David Hensley, actually help me to tweak it just right. You know, that way, whoever wanted to take one of these models, they could print it out and they could play the game. You know, so I made some of the main cars that were spoken about in the books. So, you know, you just got to really look at what is realistic that you can get to. And sometimes you got to learn the hard way. I'm one of them stubborn ones.
Yeah. Now, one thing I'm curious about, when you set your initial target mm-hmm. on Kickstarter, how do you arrive at that number?
So we knew that, so all of our anchor authors, if they gave us an original story, they got 8 cents a word. And if they gave us a reprint, it was 1 cent a word. Robert Silverberg gave us a really good price on his essay. So we know all those costs. I have their stories. I know how long they are. I know that that's going to cost. And then you have to count for Kickstarter taking their 10%. So you have to bump it by that.
Mm-hmm.
Like
your editorial fees, that's now a stretch goal?
No, I won't get paid as an editor at all. I'll get paid by how well it does, because I am a partial owner of Calendar of Fools. So I will theoretically see mine on the back end, if as long as it does well.
Yeah, I'm just curious if the idea is to have the initial target be as low as
possible. Yeah, yes. So you can possible. Succeed and keep yes. pressing forward.
And then you can yeah. make your stretch goals, because then you're yeah. in. Once you made your first target, now you're in.
Yeah, your original target is the lowest you can possibly do it for. So for us, we had what we're paying our authors, and then the maximum amount we would pay if every story we bought was 5,000 words. So that'd be 40,000 new words, and we decided to set it at 5 cents a word, because that is the lowest pro rate that we, because for the, it was a Horror Writers of America, 5 cents to pro sale, mm-hmm. something like
I
that.
Think so, yeah.
So that's the lowest pro rate that we could feel good about paying. So we didn't want to start, because within our workings, we started off paying ourselves 1 cent a word for our originals. We didn't want to do that for everyone else's slush stories. We want to start them off at what was technically a pro rate somewhere. So right. we start off at 5 cents, and we have stretch goals to get them to 6, 7, and 8 cents. But the lowest we wanted to pay for a slush story was 5 cents a word. So that was our minimum that we set it at.
I get it. All right. So you set the lowest possible that you can produce the book for.
Right.
And then do your stretch goals to be able to get into quote unquote profit.
Right.
Yeah, you get the extras.
Not just profit necessarily. I mean, but for our case, our first three stretch goals are just to pay our authors more. So we want to get from 5 cents to 6 cents is an SFWA semi-pro rate, 7 cents still semi-pro, and then once we get to 8 cents, we're paying a professional rate.
For the genre.
Yes, for science fiction and fantasy, and we'll be paying that for all of the slushed stories. So we'd be paying them a prorate, which is what we ultimately want to do. We want to pay our writers. Right. And then after that, our stretch goals are, again, not for profit. They are to increase the size of the stories we will slush. So it goes from five, we're starting at five. The fourth stretch goal will get us to 6,000 words max, and the seventh stretch goal will get us 7,500, which is the longest a short story can be under awards guidelines.
Right.
So, and then after that, we would be getting into bigger profit range for us. Then that's, again, what we use that for. We just roll that into our next project for more upfront funding.
Tracking, I mean, that's what profit's about, to do that type of stuff.
Now, are you doing the tuckerizations and stuff like that as just add-ons?
Yep, those are add-ons. The reward tiers, all we have are the ebook, paperback, fullbacker, so you get them both, and then the critiques, so you can get a Calendar Fool's critique or a critique from me.
Now, is there going to be a special limited edition hardback?
We thought about it. It's something that we can add, because people can always change their what they're backing for at any point. We have not talked enough about it. It's not for sure on there yet. We thought about doing also alt art covers, which we're not doing, but the idea of doing a hardback just for the Kickstarter is still something that we are open to discuss.
I found a lot of traction on that.
Yeah.
When it was like, okay, if we hit these goals, there will be a hardback available.
Yeah.
And it didn't take much for me to convert over and make the hardback over on Ingram.
Right.
Well, good. So we're getting close to our hour mark here. So what does a person need to do to find out about this project to be able to participate?
You'll have the links for the Kickstarter. You go to our socials. You can find Calendar Fools on Facebook, Twitter, Blue Sky, and Instagram. Whenever we do updates about the project, it'll be blasted on all of those. And through the Kickstarter itself. So mostly use the link that's with this episode to go follow the Kickstarter so you can be alerted when it launches, because then you'll get every single up for sure. Every single update will come through the Kickstarter. And then also follow our socials, whichever social media platform you prefer. You just need to follow one. It's going to be the same updates, you know, minus character limitations on some of them.
Right.
So just keep track of us. Follow the Kickstarter so you're alerted, and choose whichever social media platform you prefer and follow us on there.
Sounds good. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen.
And then we also have a coupon code.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We have a coupon. But that's not all.
No, yeah. For listening to this podcast, we wanted to give all the listeners a code so you can go get our first anthology, Inner Workings, in ebook form cheaper. The coupon code is for Smashwords. The code is PKNQF. It will let you get Inner Workings for $2.99 as opposed to $4.99. So it'll take $2 off for you. And that code will expire at the end of the Kickstarter campaign.
Well, there you go. So thank you very much, gents.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. Subscribe to the Writers of the Future podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We've also been syndicated on the United Public Radio Network, where you can find these podcasts as well. Writers of the Future series can be purchased wherever books are sold in the U.S., Canada, the U.K., Australia, and South Africa, and available everywhere via Amazon.com. We are especially appreciative of our sponsor, Carnation, for supporting this podcast. Carnation was introduced in 1899, and 2024 marks its 125th birthday. So if that doesn't show you customer support, I don't know what does. Writers and Illustrators of the Future contest created by Elrond Hubbard to provide a means for the aspiring writer and artist to be seen and acknowledged for 4 decades. It is free to enter and open to amateur short story writers and artists of science fiction or fantasy. Again, thank you very much, Storm, Hillbilly, and John.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.